We're all virtually limitless.
This podcast is to provide a space for people to grow,
to rise,
and build. This is for the people that are ready to step up and make moves, no matter where they came from. Welcome to the podcast.
Virtually limitless. This life we live, we get to choose. We can make excuses or make moves.
It's up to you.
Yeah, your network is your network.
So find your tribe or build it.
There's some change about to happen. I can feel it. Oh, this life we were given it. So take advantage, start living
it. I'm on a mission, new beginnings to start living.
Yeah, virtually limitless.
You are tuning in to another episode of.
This is another episode of Virtually Limitless.
What's up, Virtually Limitless entrepreneurs? It's your man here, Trey Carmichael, coming at you with another episode of Virtually Limitless podcast. And today I'm coming at you with my man, Roman Prokopchuk. And why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do and why you do it for the people who don't know you, my man?
Yeah, so thanks for having me on. I'm a first-generation immigrant from Ukraine. I came to the U.S. in 1990 with six other family members to a two-bedroom apartment. Ukraine was still under the Soviet Union. I went to school here for criminal justice, really, in terms of college. Last semester, I interned with the Secret Service on the counterfeit currency squad, held a top-secret federal clearance, and then I graduated and the recession hit. So state, local, federal agencies froze hiring. I was kind of depressed for months, couldn't find a job. Then opportunity presented itself. Someone at the gym basically said, come out to my car, I want to give you something. Handed me a packet about search engine optimization out of necessity. I said I had nothing to lose. And since 2008, I've been on the agency side, founded my own agency in 2012, worked with a bunch of Fortune 500 companies, 600 clients plus at this point, managed seven-figure portfolios for other companies. So basically self-taught and self-made in the industry because of necessity. And I'm also a podcast host, which actually helped me in digital marketing because I started applying principles and things like recommending, you know, interviews to clients for PR and SEO opportunities, partnering with podcast networks in terms of media buys. So the art of podcasting really introduced me and added that scope of, you know, the audio medium to kind of my digital marketing stack that, you know, we offer clients.
Awesome, man. So can we dive a little bit more into that story? I'm sure that there was a lot of mindset shifts that you had to go through.
Yeah, I mean, to get into it, it was out of necessity. Then when I first got into it, you know, funny enough, it's like the first business experience. So that person that I met, I actually did work for him for about 2 to 3 months, but his cat ended up getting cancer and he had dropped $20,000 on his cat. So the money he was supposed to pay me for that time went to the cat. So that was a learning experience right into business. Not necessarily like making deals or anything like that on handshakes or people that you might be friends with that lead into business may not necessarily go the direction you want, but obviously it was a learning experience. And then I was picked up by a company called LexisNexis, where it was a 50,000 person company that showed me more of the corporate structure and something that I didn't necessarily want to do. Not that I'm, you know, knocking anyone that's, you know, working for a corporation or, you know, has that kind of corporate ladder mindset to stay at a company for X amount of years and retire. I just saw it was very political. It wasn't for me. And, you know, when I went to about 20, 29 years old, before I switched or turned 30, my mindset shift kind of changed direction. So I was prior to that chasing kind of titles, bonuses, promotions in that sense. And then when I turned 30, it was more like a heart-led entrepreneur, adding as much value as possible, having empathy, gratitude. And when I switched over to that mindset, it exponentially increased the genuine connections I made in business and in personal life and really grew my business and my brand as well.
I love that, man. So what was your process from jumping from corporate to running your own business? Because it's definitely very different. All of a sudden you have to hold yourself accountable and you're the one that has to make sure everything happens. And really you have to wear every single hat. Whereas before you only had to wear the one hat that was your position. So how did you tackle all that?
Yeah, I feel it's like the mindset. If anyone's gone to college for a period of time, junior college, community college, when you're in high school, kind of your teachers somewhat baby you, you know, you have to do your homework, so on and so forth. And then you get to college and the teacher's like, I don't care if you come, I don't care if you do your homework, and it's all on you. So I think it started basically in the company I worked at. There was a large digital marketing department. I would say one of the biggest in any company in New Jersey where I was. And a lot of people, different skill sets, were leaving to go to other agencies, getting promoted, going to Manhattan in New York in terms of a lot of agencies there, getting senior roles, freelancing, starting their own, you know, agencies. And I basically saw like my knowledge base and my experience was on par, if not more, in terms of what I've accomplished. So why not me? And to begin with, it was more like a side hustle. So basically 9 to 5, I would be at that job. And then I got home and the first thing I would work on, and probably, you know, like 7 to 12, 1, 2 in the morning, would be servicing clients. And I think the beginning part of that was a lot of collaboration. So like the name I made for myself and the results driven kind of case studies and information I had on successes really spoke to for themselves. And I knew at that point a lot of people. So a lot of people were referring work to me, or if they had an agency or had some kind of, you know, freelance opportunity and didn't necessarily know or wanted to undertake, because my pillar is search engine optimization, and I saw the value of the changing ecosystem of the internet. So I got into organic social, paid social, media buys, paid search, online reputation management, and so on. And they knew that, you know, I had great results within that. So they basically said, hey, this is what I'm working on. This is the proposal I'm doing. And I would basically scope the project, what my agency would need to be compensated, and basically be like a some of the clients were like a white label arrangement. So the client would pay the person that referred me that work, and then in turn, that other agency or freelancer would, you know, pay my agency. So that was kind of like the foundations. And it's still a great model in terms of really partnering with people, because it's really results driven and people know you do a great job. That's why they kind of keep coming back to you.
So, man, I love that. So, where does all the confidence come from for you, brother? Because a lot of people, they're jumping into the entrepreneur space, they're jumping into the business world. Maybe they want to start a podcast, but they have that little voice in the back of their head that's like, ah, you can't do it. They don't want to listen to you. So, how did you ever overcome that stuff and build your confidence up to the point that it's at now?
Yeah, it's one of those things where I think you have a certain amount of grit from the situations that you come out of. So me being born in the Soviet Union, seeing how that was in terms of oppressive, both from economical sense in terms of businesses where, you know, if you paid off the government and there was another business in your space, if you paid the government more, they would like take your licenses and permits away, they would close you, they would jail you, and things of that nature, no free speech. So I know kind of like that aspect of communism and that kind of repressive life, even though I only lived within that for 4 years before coming to the US. But coming to the US with six other family members, my grandfather was already retired. He had to be a roofer for another 20 years, going to work Monday to Friday, 7 to 7, and then going to church on Sunday. So that work ethic and grit, I think, was instilled with me from where I came from in the world and what I saw in terms of my upbringing. And I think, you know, a lot of people underestimate the opportunities they have in the US. Obviously, a lot of people are coming from situations and then they drive themselves like straight from the gutter and then make something of themselves. But like people don't necessarily realize how good they have it in the US. I know a lot of people complain about some of the little things or something going wrong or this and that opportunity, but at the end of the day, it's a you versus you battle. You have to get out of your own way and out of your own head to actually undertake something like my podcast. If I started when I wanted to, I would have started probably 5 years prior. But the main thing is that I started and I started getting success and fell in love with the process and meeting people, networking with people, and just collaborating with people within the space. And if I never undertook that, probably, you know, 20, 30, 40 years down the line, I would be sitting there and saying, what if I started that podcast? Maybe I would have met this person. It would have opened up this door. So if you don't undertake that, you have to have a mindset of that things aren't going to be handed to you. And if you don't undertake that, there will definitely be regret. And if you do try something and you fail, it's a learning experience. Nothing is a failure unless you don't take anything out of it.
Awesome, man. Absolutely. And everybody's scared to fail, but in reality, as an entrepreneur, we have to be willing to fail because that's when we learn the most lessons and when we're going to be able to build the best system is after those failures.
Well, you need to fail to succeed. I mean, if you want to use a sports analogy, not every athlete in any sport wins every game, but athletes that have lost win championships and become the greatest players that, you know, ever were in their space. I mean, that's like an easy analogy for me because I like sports, but, you know, you're going to have wins and losses. And like I said, if you don't take anything from those losses or those losses make you mentally kind of shut down or quit, I mean, you're going to keep pivoting to things and never really reach your potential.
Absolutely, man. So you've had the privilege of working with a lot of very successful companies and very, very many companies at that. What would you say are the things that the most successful clients that you've had all had in common?
In terms of digital, just forward facing and not only being about traditional digital, but emerging. So when something comes out or a new feature of a platform or a new platform or a new way to reach your target audience, really not being afraid to test it out. If it worst case, it didn't work, you get some findings out of it and you can share internally or actually create content about that within your industry that makes you look obviously more of an industry leader because you ran this test. But I mean, I would think that across the board, because I have worked with a lot of very regulated industries. So like pharma and life sciences, financial services, and oftentimes it's hard to be creative, but still like pushing them to situations where they now have an internal podcast or an external podcast for audio content, pushing them more into social, even though it's a little hard. And it's hard to be timely because like for pharma and life sciences, every piece of content or every media asset or plan has to go through a medical, legal, and regulatory board that can push it back for simply them not liking an image or them not liking a specific word in a specific line in an ad. So there's all these caveats in different industries, but really being a proponent for change and pushing them and showing them the value and the lack of, I guess, fear, because they're afraid if they say something, they're held liable, like by all these consumer watchdog groups and the FDA in terms of, you know, misrepresentation. So that's kind of a consideration in some of the industries that I've worked in.
Awesome, man. So I like how you talk about being an early adopter and embracing the things that are where your audience is, because I know that recently you've been spending a good bit of time on Clubhouse, right?
Well, I've been a native Android user since, you know, Android phones came out. I saw the value because I do have a podcast. The audio medium would be a superior. I mean, it's truly a social platform. It's not like you're engaging by, you know, liking a picture and commenting on it. You can have a, you know, real-time conversation and really skip like levels of connection to really connect and collaborate with someone. So I actually, my wife had an iPhone. I downloaded the app on her phone, and then it got real quick in terms of me trying to use her phone for the app. So I knew my phone was up for renewal. So I'm like, screw it. And I got an iPhone. So I saw the value and the need for a social platform like that. And, you know, I don't regret the decision because I've been on since January 5th. And in that time, I probably have gotten more business opportunities, collaborations, more show requests in terms of going and appearing on people's shows than I have in a few years of all my social channels combined. So the platform is powerful. And I think a lot of platforms are powerful in that sense, but it's really how you use it or, you know, what you add. I think I've been successful on it because I've been on there truly to add value and give people the right information, because even that, you know, any industry, you're going to have people just, you know, here's a course that's a generic course or pushing you to things and not really providing value. So I've been trying to provide value on Clubhouse and other channels. And I think that's resonated well with people as well in terms of connecting.
Awesome, man. So do you have like a strategy of maybe how you're hosting, collaborating, like what you are actually doing on Clubhouse to get in front of audiences? Because so far I've mostly just been using it to go in there, ask questions, and then get people on the show. I'm not really 100% sure how to use it in a way that I'm actually creating on the platform yet.
Yeah, so I co-mod two rooms daily and host my own room Monday to Friday, 11 p.m. Eastern, called Podcast After Dark. So I position it in terms of, you know, what you can do in terms of digital marketing to promote and amplify your podcast, but answer other questions. So the first day I really met two people on the app. We were kind of in the same rooms and we really mesh well. And then one of the people started a room and then I started co-moderating it. Then the other started the room and then I started my room and we really have like the day blanketed. So people coming in looking to start a podcast, established podcasters, there's been a lot of like industry leaders in terms of different hosting platforms and different news outlets that come in the room and share. And we like have a like kind of futurist conversation that it turns, but really participating in the conversation and other rooms that I jump in to make sure I give like clear and valuable information. So like I've been consistently modding and hosting my own room for the last 3 weeks. I applied for a club. So hopefully I can get a club, and me and the people that I've been modding with, we've had offline conversation where this can possibly turn into a podcast network or additional courses that we provide, or even like a mastermind that those people that we add value to have seen the value we add and, you know, get 10, 20 people when like, you know, this pandemic nonsense dies down, or go to a state where it's still fairly open, like Florida, and really invite these people and add like a crash course of an advanced level to it. So there's a lot of possibilities. Actually, the two other people, we also may start a podcast together where it's giving real world advice that's connected to Clubhouse. So like if we heard a question in one of the rooms, we'll kind of go back to it and expand on it and give a more in-depth strategy, because I'm the one that really is covering the digital marketing aspect. There's a person also with the other room that I co-mod that has a studio, and he's an audio engineer, and the other person is proficient in video and in live streaming. So we kind of cover all the bases and really are building kind of a tribe or a community on the platform.
Awesome, man. So I do want to ask the digital savage himself, like if you were having to start over and start getting to your first six figures as a company, what are the things that you would be focused on in your marketing?
Well, I mean, I had the luxury not to necessarily steal clients, but before I started, I worked probably with like 300 clients at that point, some of which weren't happy in those companies, but they were happy with me. So I think regardless of where you're working prior to starting a company, or maybe you're even pivoting into a new career, don't burn your bridges and always kind of be of value to your former clients, because those former clients remember. And I had people reach out to me, former sales reps in those companies. Hey, I know you did great on this client. The client left and now they're with me. Can you really help them with so-and-so? So I think just relationship building and doing a better job of it and really going hard on networking, which I really didn't even invest in since probably 3 or 4 years ago. So 1 year I had the goal of kind of hacking situations and meeting a lot of people that you would normally meet at conferences or have to pay thousands of dollars for free. So like Gary Vaynerchuk, Gerard Adams, Lewis Howes, Max Levchin, who's a co-founder of PayPal, and kind of really hacking the system, if you will, like places that they are or different company openings that they've had. I mean, the luxury I have is I live like around 50 minutes from Manhattan, from New York City. So that's a great place in terms of networking. So, I mean, it's really doing what you have with, you know, what you're given. And with that, I started putting myself out there more. I don't know if I would consider myself an introvert at this point, but in terms of like networking in person, I think I was, and I really threw myself out there and started like maintaining previous relationships where people started remembering. So I think those initial ties and foundations were built on the already network that I established. So I would pretty much go harder on that to begin with.
Absolutely, man. And when it comes down to it, that first six figures really is just about building that network and nurturing those relationships, and like, because your network is really your foundation. If you don't have a network, you can't accomplish everything by yourself. That's just not how it works.
Yeah, you're going to get to a certain place or a certain level, and then you won't be able to physically, based on man hours, to scale. So you also need processes in place and figure out what's important to you as a business and prioritize, because you want to be involved also in the thing that you're the expert in and what you actually are passionate about. So things like, you know, daily, you know, tasks that are repetitive for each client, you may outsource it or you may find someone. Obviously, when somebody starts out, they're not necessarily ready to onboard someone. But, you know, figuring situations like maybe you partner with a college or a school locally and become like a go-to internship place where literally you're accredited so that person can, you know, put in hours for you and learn, but they're getting credits for that, you know, class. So workarounds mm-hmm. like that where you can actually benefit someone, give them working knowledge, but also get, you know, fulfillment hours in return in terms of what you're doing.
That's awesome, man. So once you've hit that first six figures, you've got money to start putting into ads, you've got money to start investing in things, like what do you usually have businesses start focusing on?
Well, like I said, it depends. If you have something that can be outsourced out or you can hire someone for, and it can really fill like a day. So I wouldn't go like overzealous about hiring up, because I mean, I've had situations where there were different agency models that I've seen or partnered with where they would get one big client, hire up for that client and put kind of all their eggs in their basket for that client, especially in like pharma life sciences, their big contracts. Sometimes you win a bid for like all of a North American oncology business for like Pfizer. Well, that may be, you know, $30, $40, $50 million deal for an agency. They'll hire a team of 20, 30, 40 people. And there's a high level of kind of turnover in terms of the pharma industry. So it's very kind of clicky. So you usually know someone that's an executive that you partner with, and then they go to a company and then they kind of pitch you and you become part of like the RFP process in terms of being able to bid on a proposal. And if that person happens to leave, the next person that fills them usually has a preferred agency that they work with. So it's this ever revolving door. So really being able to scale and forecast well, I think is key. And if you can find something that like, okay, you built a digital marketing agency. So if you know what you're theoretically working on for clients and you have a process for each kind of thing that you're fulfilling or content that you're building, you can, you know, logically scale that and understand, you know, I need somebody for 40 hours that right now is tied to my personal time, or I have other people looped in. So if you can bucket things like that and you can find a role that either covers that, or if there's some like spillover that can, they can take some other stuff off your plate, like maybe in terms of being an executive assistant, maybe creating content, not only just working on search engine optimization on other aspects or social media, I would kind of identify it that way.
Awesome, man. So you keep talking about your team and the people and all of that. And I know that you've been working with digital teams for a very long time, over 10 years. So do you have a strategy at this point for building your digital team, like specific questions you ask, what you're looking for? How do you do that?
It depends on the level and the level that I'm hiring for. If it's more like an entry level, just general, like common sense and passion goes a long way, because I mean, I've spoken and went in to talk to outgoing classes of digital marketing students in university, like TCNJ, the College of New Jersey, and other places. And they're kind of like deer in headlights. They don't understand anything about the industry or like the functionality or how their role would be, or the high turnover rates at some agencies. They don't understand any of that. And they only read what's in the book. So if I run across someone that's, I'm hiring for like an entry level role or like a freelance, maybe a writer, that passion and willingness to learn goes a lot farther than kind of like what they learned in a book or they read. Because I think when you do have that passion, you can easily teach someone and they'll retain it. But kind of like those soft skills are really hard to find. So for an entry level role, yes. If it's like a mid to somewhat senior role, I really have to have a conversation with them and maybe give them like a real world scenario, what they would do, you know, how they would handle a business relationship or a client contact, or how they would fulfill something in terms of strategy, or them actually sending me one of their previous clients for me to discuss, to have a genuine conversation and what they actually did, because there's a lot of, you know, levels of experience. Some people have been more in the trenches, some are more generalists, which isn't necessarily bad either way. But if you're looking for a particular role, you have to be really kind of meticulous about it, because I mean, anyone can write anything really on their resume. It's kind of checking it and really understanding, are they about what they put on paper?
100%. You've got to do your due diligence. And I think that too many people, they get that impressive resume and they get excited.
Yep, and there's a lot of people. There's actually been a lot of cases, and in the news, there's a lot of people that were executives in big companies that really like legitimately lied about their experience or about some kind of education component, and they ended up being let go. Obviously, they have the luxury to get a severance package. Other people don't have that luxury, but you know, everybody tries to make themselves look as best as possible on paper and in general. So you have to be kind of mindful of that.
Awesome, man. So you're the host of the Digital Savage podcast, and you've touched on it a little bit, but what is the power of starting that show been in your business?
Yeah, so at first it started as a solo show. So I was really talking about kind of digital marketing strategy, that strategies that you can really implement, real world things that actually added value and not just top level things, and referring people to something that's gated, some other information that adds more value. Experiences about meeting or collaborating with people within the industry. I became a foster parent during that process, so talking about my experiences. And then in February of 2019, my grandfather passed away, which was a main role model in my life. So I think one reason I switched over to an interview format is it actually helped, you know, get myself out of my own head, because I've been remote. My business model is like fully remote for the last 5 years, and there's a lot of quiet time. But sometimes, if you're going through something, that quiet time leaves the opportunity to go into some dark places. So I figured, you know, maybe I'll jump on a call, talk to some cool people in terms of what they've done in business, their careers, and in life. And then the conversation started getting in terms of grief they went through, loss they went through, things they've overcome, and how they dealt with it. And I think it directly impacted me in terms of getting me through that and being part of a component of the healing process. So I have that personal connection with my show now and the interview format. But since I switched over, there's been a lot of collaboration, because even after that, so if I have a guest on or if I'm on another show, I always offer, hey, you know, I've had over 250 guests on. If I can, you know, provide that list to you, if it adds you value, and if there's someone that, you know, you see that you can possibly add value to in business, or would you like to have them on a show or have a discussion with them, I'll be happy to connect you. And in the last 2 years, I've been on like 110 shows. Same thing, you know, if you ever, for guests, if you ever, you know, want to go on other shows, I can help you with that. I can provide that list. And they really appreciate it. And it's a great value add, because it saves them time and it makes connections. So things like that, just simple things, have added connections, and people have reached out to me that they remembered it. Then they refer possible prospects or business to me. So it's just like, starting out with giving really adds, and not and really not expecting anything in return, just try to add as much value as possible, has really kind of grown my show and, you know, the possibilities and the prospects that have come in through it, which wasn't necessarily my direct goal in starting the show. Is more about personal branding and getting my expertise out there as well.
Awesome, man. So when it comes to getting guests for your show, like you've had some pretty incredible names on. So how do you go about getting in front of these people that most people really just can't? Like, obviously it starts with the value, but how do you get in front of them?
Yeah, when I first started and switched to an interview format, it was like a more push-pull. So I was reaching out to people, pitching them. And then when I started getting a lot of episodes under my belt, when people started seeing the value of the interviews, people started seeing, I mean, being in a top 100 in your category on Apple is nice, but it's a nice vanity metric. So if a PR agency sees that, oh, cool, like this is a top podcast, which doesn't necessarily tie to consistent growth in terms of subscribers or plays, but it's nice to attract guests. So in 2020, I think I hit top 100 in like 15 or so countries, including the English speaking markets, like 45 in the US, like 7 in the UK, 11 in Canada. So it was nice, but I started being more meticulous about it. I created like a media kit for the show. So information about the show, the audience, the demographic, the current amount of subscribers estimate, current amount of downloads, and really information in terms of how the show would add value and how would they add value directly to the audience, and not like spam it out, but really explain who I am and what I'm trying to do and how my story connects with them as well. Because there's a lot of people coming from similar experiences that, you know, a host may have went through, or in this situation, me personally. So at this point, there's a lot, I'm not necessarily looking, there's a lot of PR agencies and bookers and people individually reaching out to me, because I mean, I guess I'm blessed in the sense that 2020 was, you know, messed up in terms of the pandemic for a lot of people, but it was like one of the biggest growth years for me and my show in general. What I really want to do is not to say that, you know, there's guests that I have on that aren't as big or reputable or whatever, but just reaching out to people that I followed for years, people on the top of their industry that may be more visible. So I'm really going to make a more conscious effort to really start that outreach in the next few months as well.
Awesome, man. I love that. So you've got the podcast, you've got the business. And on top of that, like you've been a foster parent since 2018, you've had 23 kids in your house. How the heck do you keep all of that organized without letting things slip through the cracks?
Yeah, at this point, it's 25 since like the last time we spoke. And it's been for the last like 2 weeks, 5 kids currently under the age of 4. Wow. I mean, it's one of those things where like before you start something, you tell yourself, I can't do it, or it's such a big undertaking. But I didn't think I was going to get into being a foster parent if you asked me 4 years ago. I mean, the journey started with me and my wife going through 5 miscarriages in 3.5 years, which obviously was traumatic in that sense, 2 of which happened back to back Christmas. And we, you know, we first got 2 kids. We thought we were getting 1. We got licensed May 31st of 2018. And then June 1st, the next day, 2 children get dropped off at our, you know, doorstep. And it's like, figure it out. So it was interesting. It was just one of those things where it's like, you have to care for other humans, so you better figure it out right away. And, you know, we just managed the situation in terms of really creating a schedule, because one of the biggest things, kids that are coming from a situation where, you know, they haven't been fed consistently or neglected, really understanding, you know, when a bedtime is, when meals are, what we're doing, really explaining that adds a level of security. And then just being as open and loving and there for the kids as possible. And each of these kids, you know, some of which are 2, 3, 4 years old, have went through more than most adults will in their life. So it's humbling and reflective on me and how I go about business, because it puts things more into perspective and it increased my empathy for situations. So like if I was emailing you about business and maybe you were short, or, you know, you like snapped off or something there, I have to think like, you're not necessarily being malicious or angry or mean at me. What are you actually dealing with, you know, outside of that in other business ventures in your life? So it actually added a lot of perspective. And luckily, because, you know, I personally would not be able to do it alone. You know, my wife does a lot of it. She's the one that's very meticulous in terms of like super organization and taking all the kids to doctors and this, that, or the other. So like having, this is the benefit of having a team. So having a strong partner that is able to support you and kind of fills in the holes with strengths she has that you may have weaknesses, I think really has helped me to do that. And if I think about it, I still don't believe that, you know, I've had 25 children in our home, but like I said, you never know what kind of impact you can have or what you can do until you actually undertake it.
Absolutely, man. I love that. And honestly, that resonates with me very highly too, because I recognize that the kids are really what's going to make the future. And we're actually starting a program in the very near future called Limitless Kids, where we're going to be offering group coaching, a software toolkit, and really the things that kids need to have a community and to be able to be an entrepreneur. Because when I was younger, I got mixed up in drugs, I got addicted, I started dealing drugs. And the only reason I did those things was because I craved the community, the acceptance, and I just wanted to be an entrepreneur. So like, I definitely understand why you want to take care of the kids too, on like at a high level, man.
Yeah. And a majority of them are coming from situations where there's no positive male role models. So introducing that to people and children, that there's another way to live life than what they've experienced or seen until then. And regardless if they're in our home for, you know, a few days or a year, really giving them a foundation to possibly, when they get to a fork in the road, like thinking back to it, okay, there's another way to do it. You know, that I can actually like be motivated, or I can accomplish something based on, you know, the home I was in and the unconditional love they've shown me and the situations that, you know, those foster parents that I had came from. And I think hopefully that'll lead to kind of making more right choices, because, you know, currently there's 400,000 kids around in the foster care system. And if, you know, they've been in the system, so basically if a child isn't adopted and the parental rights are terminated, they basically stay as a ward of the state till they turn 18 usually, and then they age out. So unfortunately, the older a child gets in that situation, the harder it is to adopt them. So if they age out, they have like a 50 or 60% chance of being human trafficked, ending up in prison, ending up on drugs, or dead. And if you look at the incarceration rates, which is crazy, I believe at this point, the amount of incarcerated males in the US, 60% have been in the foster care system at one point or the other in their life. So, you know, having a positive, you know, role model as a foster parent, I think is huge.
Absolutely, man. So I do got to ask, if you could go back and have a conversation with yourself before starting any of this, before when you were a kid, what are the things that you would make sure that you knew and understood, man?
It's funny because on Clubhouse, I've had the discussion about imposter syndrome, and there's this other syndrome that basically, like, if you get into a career, like, you think you know everything, like you turn 18, you turn 19, like, you know, you're the top of the world, older people than you, your parents can't tell you anything. And I think it's like that in business as well. And then you, instead of taking that advice, a lot of the time you go like trial by fire, which you could have avoided it. So I think one of those things is like listening to the wisdom of those around you and those that came before you, because now I value the opinion and welcome the feedback of people that came before me or in places that I want to be. So people 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the line in terms of what I want to accomplish, or even people that have a personal connection in terms of being foster parents, things of that nature that are close to my heart. So I think not kind of taking things for granted in terms of what people have to give in terms of advice. I know I've done it in terms of a personal level, a lot of things that my grandfather's told me, like when he was alive in his 80 some odd years on this earth, you know, a lot of the time those things I took for granted in the moment. And then I reflected on it after the fact. I'm like, you know, if I took this wisdom, you know, where could I be? And I mean, it's really interesting because each of those situations, somebody had something wise to say, regardless of how it was delivered. Maybe the feedback came and you thought it was like aggressive to you, or you were like offended by it, but feedback's feedback regardless of how you're getting it. And I think that wisdom, and I value wisdom over knowledge, because knowledge can be taught by, you know, reading something, watching a video or movie, or listening to a podcast. Wisdom, you actually have to live through it. So I value that kind of real world consuming or being in that situation and then actually providing feedback on it.
That's beautiful, man. Thank you so much for sharing that. So, man, you've got an incredible story. You've dropped so many bombs on us. What is the best way for people to see more of you and get involved with you?
Yeah, so like you pronounce my last name, it's a little tough, but there are a lot of Roman Prokopchuks out there. If you Google my name, I'm on every social platform. My company website is NovaZoraDigital.com, and my podcast is The Digital Savage Experience, which my website is being built now. But feel free to reach out, and if you have any questions or feedback on anything, I'm always happy to add value and be of help in anything that I've spoke about today.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
If you learned anything from this show, make sure you leave a review and check out the description to join our community and grab some free resources. And make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode of Virtually Limitless.